For the IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. A link in IRC is coming to join the group. If you don't already, you may need to set up a W3C web account, which you can do here. And the W3C community contributor license agreement is this next link that I'm pasting in. Okay, so call notes. These minutes and audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. The following URL I'm pasting into IRC. We use IRC to queue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. And all attendees should type present plus, the word present, the symbol plus, no space in between, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus, the letter Q, the symbol plus, no space in between, to add yourself to the queue. And you can add an optional reminder by saying Q plus and then space to mention something. The word to is required there. And if you're not on IRC, just speak up and ask to be put on the queue. We'll add you. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. And a note that this meeting is held by voice, not IRC, so try to keep the main thread of conversation going over voice. Next, we do need a scribe volunteer, so if anyone wants to sign up now, save us from this painful process. Otherwise, I'll start going through the list and calling on people.
It's a delightful, joyous process.
Jeff Orgel, are you here today? I do not see him. I don't see Kalia either. Ganesh, are you able to scribe today?
Oh, I think Kalia actually just joined just as you said that.
I'm on.
Oh, okay.
Sure, I can do my best.
Oh, thanks, Kalia. So we'll update so that we don't call on you again for a while. Okay, for introductions and reintroductions, let me go through and find people who haven't introduced themselves for a while. Again, I'm going to look at the scribe list for that.
Well, we are likely to have some new people. Oh.
Yeah, actually, I should call first to see if anyone new or returning after an absence wants to add them or introduce themselves. Blaz P.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Okay, hello, my name is Blaz. I'm a researcher at University of Maribor, Slovenia. And at university, we are part of H2020 European Union project, where we also have one pilot between four universities, where we want to achieve that students will share the blockchain-based credentials among the universities. This is the main reason why I'm here today. And we are looking also for European blockchain infrastructure and European self-sovereign identity, how to integrate the V3C standards in our work. Thank you. I will share some links to the years.
Great. Thank you for joining us. Just a second. Let me see if... okay. And I'm going to call on a couple of alias. I think... Wayne, from Tyrion, I think that's your alias on the call. Would you mind doing a reintroduction?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. I'm Wayne, the CEO of Tyrion. Our team, spearheaded by Buck, developed the libraries that we're going to be discussing today. And I'll save the rest of the presentation and discussion about LSACs for Buck to give.
Great. Thank you. Okay, for the next item, let's see. We're going on to announcements and reminders. We try to keep this up to date here at this link. Okay, so let me call out some things we have coming up. Actually, this needs to be updated. We've already had the DID working group face-to-face. Rebooting Web of Trust in Buenos Aires is happening 16th through 20th of March. We don't have a link there, so Joe or Christopher, if you could add a link to information about signing up via Eventbrite, that would be great. The 5th through the 8th of April, there's no identity in Las Vegas.
Sorry, the way you parsed that, it's like there is no identity. There's none. There's none in Las Vegas for that weekend. What stays in Vegas won't even be attached to your identity.
Yes. and then the 28th through the 30th of April, we have IIW, or the Internet Identity Workshop in Mountain View, California. I'll add a link for signing up to that. And then the 8th through 11th of June, there's Identiverse happening in Denver, Colorado. And here's the link to that. I see a cue. Christopher, you're up.
Yeah, I wanted to briefly mention that we have a very good proposal from The Hague in the Netherlands for rebooting in September, end of September the 21st, which is the week after the Berlin Blockchain Week. So we'll let people know about that, but I know that there's been a lot of interest about us returning to Europe, so want to let people know we're making progress.
Great, thank you for that. Any other announcements that we missed there that someone wants to add? Kalia, you're up. I'll scribe for you.
Also of note, in June is ID for Africa is the first week of June. There's some SSI companies going into Marrakesh. And the second week of June, which conflicts with Identiverse, is a conference called RightsCon in Costa Rica. And identity is now on the agenda of the digital rights community, which is nice. There should be a bunch of sessions going on there.
Great. Thank you. Okay. For the next section, we'll move on to progress on action items. Let me get a link to the list of action items. Okay, if you follow this link, you'll see the ones that we wanted to review for today. Okay, so scribe tool issues. We talked about this last week or recently in any case. I just wanted to give one other update, a decision that the chair has made. We want to run by the group to see if there's any pushback, but we want to switch to one-step publishing. So this means that the two steps were happening because of the need to clean up minutes. And what that entails, actually, I'll give a link to what is involved with cleaning up minutes. But basically, if we follow better rigor during the calls, watching for things as they go along. So examples of that might include making sure to add the topic that we're talking about. So if you see me adding, topic, et cetera, that's what I'm doing there. I'm trying to minimize the work happening in the scribe cleanup. So basically, if we if we're good about that and disciplined about various other things as we go, the need to clean up the minutes is lessened. But also, we'll provide a way if to clean up the minutes after the fact. So after that HTML page is published. So if you just check in IRC .log with the cleaned up version, all the HTML minutes get regenerated for you. So this basically turns at least the text publishing part into a very simple process. So let me, just for reference, I'll show you kind of the part that we will be saving right here. These are the notes on cleaning up the minutes. So let us know if you have any concerns. I think that, the fact that if we're more disciplined as we're during the meeting, then we should minimize the amount of work that we needed to do anyway during cleanup. But then also we have a process for cleaning up afterwards and making sure that the HTML gets updated. So I think that we will close out this issue with the documentation on make sure everyone knows how they can edit IRC.log or to reach out to the chairs if they want us to do it for them. And then the only issue that we'll have remaining around the scribe tool issues is fixing the voice automatic cleanup. So right now we're backfilling the voice aspects as an afterwards process. But we made good progress to getting this much more automated. You don't have to install all the tools on your local machine. So I think we're happy with the progress we've made and probably, don't have too much time of our own to invest further in improving it. But certainly if anyone in the community has the ability, time to automate cleaning up the audio, then that would be great. And reach out to us if you have any questions about that. Christopher, I see you on the queue.
Yes. So just to give a little more context, it has been taking the chairs, and mostly Kim, I think I did one, several hours to do this after each of our meetings. So this is actually a pretty big deal. So Kim has been doing amazing work, doing this manually or semi-manually for some time. Manu did it for years before her, and so this is a really great improvement. But one of the consequences is that if you need something changed in the transcript, it can be done, but it's kind of done after the fact. So, you'll need to notify the chairs. In most cases, it's pretty easy for us to make a change to the revised log. And then in some cases, if somebody needs something redacted, we can do that as well. That's just a little bit more difficult. But it requires some more discipline that we make sure we all type in present plus, and we all do, and the chairs pay attention to some of these little details while we're doing it. So thank you for the time for listening about how this works. And we'd love if somebody knows how to do, audio editing online. I've seen some tools that do it, like SoundCloud and stuff. It would be great if we could figure out how to do the audio transcripts and something similar. That's it.
Thanks, Christopher. Okay, we had one more issue to cover. So that one we're close to closing out. We have our longstanding SIP issue. Can I call on Christopher or Joe? Can you add some more context in where we left that?
Okay, let me paste in. If there's anybody online that is using SIP, whether or not it's on their iPhone or on a Mac or a PC or whatever, could you please share with us you know, what settings are working for you and which clients you're using. This is costing Digital Bazaar to have us dial in. And so we'd really like to try to reduce those costs. But a number of difficulties in, you know, finding a common thread. We really want to get some documents done.
Christopher, quick question. What's the best way to do that, to share the documentation?
Yeah, Kim, there was a URL that you shared last week.
Paste it in.
It's in the issue.
We have, yeah.
It's in the issue. Got it. Okay, understood. Yeah, got it. Okay. Thanks.
But yeah, so just to jump in, one example with, at least with Windows on OnSIP, it was hard to find out where to get the free account because they optimized to get you to sign up for the paid version. So I think we just need to flesh this out with how we overcame some of the obstacles on the different platforms.
Okay. Sounds great. I think we will keep this issue and keep pinging until it closes out. But hopefully, this is a pretty lightweight item. If someone already has SIP working, and it would be a great way to help out the rest of the community. So that was all we had for progress on action items. I think then that means we're ready to move on to the main topic, and for this I will first I'll include some links that you shared. So our topic will be Lightning Service Authentication Tokens, and we have Buck here to present for us. He included, as sent out in the minutes, a link to a blog post and some slides. And Buck, at this point I'll turn over to you. And everyone, if you have questions about his presentation, please just add yourself to the queue, and we'll get to you. So go ahead, Buck.
Hi. Thanks very much. Excited to be presenting to everybody. And yeah, with regards to questions, I know this is a bit of a mixed group, so some people that have different levels of experience with Bitcoin, blockchain, and Lightning, so feel free to jump in if I'm skipping over something you're a little bit too fast. And just as a brief introduction, as Wayne said, I've been working with Turian for the past year on various different projects, and most recently for about the past 6 months, kind of doing authentication primarily with Lightning. I was working a little bit with some Blockstack technology as well. And this is primarily around the 402 status code, and kind of which is the payment required status code that is kind of gone unused since originally proposed, just because there hasn't been a native payment system for the internet. And so I started off with a kind of homespun version that leveraged macaroons a little bit, and in October of last year, Lalu, also known as Roast Beef on Twitter and GitHub from Lightning Labs, proposed this idea of called LSATs, or Lightning Service Authentication Tokens. So I'll be presenting on that. And if you want to follow along with the slides, I'd recommend follow along in the presentation, as there are some diagrams that should hopefully make things easier to follow. So with that, I'll just kind of narrate as I'm going through the slides if people want to click through. So I'm going to start off on slide number two, just covering what we're talking about. We've got kind of the state of authentication today. Brief introduction to macaroons. Again, I'm not sure what the level of familiarity is in the group, so I'll try not to go into too much detail. And if you have any specific questions that I'm going through, please let me know. And then what an LSAT is, what problems it solves, and how it really works. Some of the use cases, and when I talk about LSATs, we'll try and give the relevant architecture, relevant pieces of Lightning architecture that you kind of need to know for understanding how LSATs work. And there was a question in the mailing list that I hope to address, which is around, you know, if there's any compatibility issues across different implementations. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the use cases. Hopefully this will be of interest to a lot of people in the group as I, you know, looking back at some of the previous presentations, was obviously trying to think about how, you know, new authentication schemes can be used and leveraged and also, you know, kind of trying to solve this chicken and egg problem related to authentication and also anything in cryptocurrencies. And at the end, we've got I'll have several links, some of the toolkit that we've been developing at Tyrion, namely Boltwall and LSAT.js. Boltwall is a Node.js middleware that developers can add into any server as a paywall to require Lightning payments for access to a route. And LSAT.js is a client-side library for interacting with LSATs. So, going to the next slide, API keys and state of authentication. There are usually two options today for authentication, the way that most people are interacting on the web, and that's either through email and password or OAuth. Both of these, I think, are very problematic. I don't think the reasons of why they're problematic are going to be very new to many people in their group, but real quickly, there's security and privacy issues involved. You know, you kind of have to trust the server that you're sending the credentials to and hope that they're storing these in a safe way, that they're transporting them in a safe way. You're also just littering the internet with personal identification, essentially, even if it's an email and password. And OAuth is, of course, you know, you're trusting Google and Facebook or AWS or whoever to be logging you in and not tracking you, which we know is definitely happening. API keys themselves have no built-in civil resistance on their own. I mean, you can create systems around this, billing maybe, but really they're just these keys that are out there and distributed, and you can make as many as you want. Again, if there's no billing, but once you ask for billing, then there's personal information tied to it. Next, there's the lack of the ability to delegate built into these API keys. Again, you can build some systems. Google and Facebook have gained the trust of the entire internet. There's no need to question them. They have your best interest in mind. Exactly. Trust but verify, right? The lack of the ability to delegate, I think this makes API keys on their own quite inflexible, and so we have to create other systems around them to kind of solve certain problems around delegation. This idea that, you know, if you're going to share access to something that you have an API key to get access to something, if you want to share that access, you're sharing an API key, and that's giving them full access at the level of that API key. There's no built-in way to delegate with API keys. The whole process is generally cumbersome: credit card, email address, normal Meetspace address. This is not good for privacy, but it's also just it's a pain. Even if somebody's not concerned with privacy, the whole process of having to get out a credit card is, you know, there's tools to make it easier, but it's still not smooth. And then I think this is really important. I don't think it gets talked about very often, but this idea that there's no way to audit how your information is actually being stored, right? So I think I mentioned this in the mailing list, this idea that, you know, we hand off our information and we hope that, you know, there's these major hacks with Home Depot and Ashley Madison or whichever other ones that, you know, you give them your information. Even if we trust them, there's no way to know why we can trust them. We can't audit them. All their systems are closed source. So you just hand off the information and hope they're storing it well. So I think it should really be a priority to make sure that we can come up with systems that when our information is being stored somewhere, we can audit that process, even if we're trusting third parties, which ideally we don't have to do. All right, so I'm going to go to the next slide. This is, we're going to cover what macaroons are. I'll keep an eye on the queue as well if anybody has any questions or something to add to. I mean, I'm still relatively new to macaroons, and I know that there's some people that have been working in this area for quite a bit longer than me, so feel free to, Manu?
Yeah.
I was going to hold my question to the end. It has more to do with, I'm going to hold my question. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so macaroons. This is a headline. The macaroons are better than cookies. If you're following along in the slides, there's a link to a Hacking Distributed article that was kind of my first introduction to kind of how they work and what the benefits are. So I'm not just being cheeky and just copying this headline, but yeah, these are kind of the advantages that you have with macaroons over cookies, or the kind of the typical credentialing systems that we rely on today. The presentation shows macarons. Really? Mine does not. I don't know. Maybe there's a old version that is published. Let me just share in case.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse the presenter. It's just those are two different kinds of cookies. What you have, what you're showing.
Oh.
What you're showing are macaron, not macaroons.
Right.
That's gotcha. That's,
okay.
I'm sorry.
I saw that picture also from that same article. That's fair.
I did not mean to derail. Sorry.
No worries. Okay, so advantages of macaroons are really how they work. Macaroons are pretty simple. You know, it's really just the best way I've understood it is, you know, kind of just like cookies. It's serialization of information that describes, just some information that will be interpreted, and the real superpower that in macaroons comes from the chained HMAC. So it's really just you have a signature that signs, you have a key that signs the information in a macaroon, and then that signature can be used to add up on new capabilities. And so it's that chaining that allows us to give a lot of the capabilities that macaroons provide. So what are those capabilities? Safer delegation. So like I just described, you can add new capabilities or delegate by adding that capability onto a macaroon and then sign it, and that's unforgeable and irreversible. The attenuation. So this idea that you can add these caveats that describe how a macaroon can and should be used. They are proof carrying. The proof of authorization is on the macaroon itself. So if you think about with an API key, that an API key is sent with some request, or a token is sent with a request, and then a server has to determine how that API key can be used. Whereas in a macaroon, it comes pre-built in with its authorization and its capabilities. Which is a lot more. And then this idea of decoupled authorization logic, they separate the policy of your application from the mechanism, which is, you know, the code that's actually upholding the policy. So this can make for a lot easier and more powerful, in my opinion, capabilities that you can code into your application, because again, like it's proof carrying. It has the capabilities built into the macaroon, and so it allows for a nice separation of logic when you're building out your infrastructure. Okay, so this idea of LSATs, we're on slide number 5 now. This is just a little bit of a play I borrowed from the original LSAT presentation by Lalu on the term the Internet of Money. So this is the API keys of money. And I think before I get into how they work, this idea and using macaroons and also a native payment system to the internet allows us to do a lot of interesting things, in my opinion. In contrast to the drawbacks of what we have today, we can do something like pay-as-you-go billing. So rather than subscriptions, where you know maybe you want to read a couple articles from the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, rather than having to pile up a bunch of subscriptions. You can pay as you go, you know, pay for what you want to read. No personal information required. You're just making payment with cryptocurrency, and it'll be associated with an authentication token. This also allows for machine-to-machine authentication, and this is one of the reasons that we were building this out at Turian, and I go into more depth about this in the blog post that's linked. But the in Turian, we're using this, or at Turian, we're using this in our Chainpoint protocol for a new version that allows for paying for machines to pay to submit hashes to the Bitcoin blockchain. And so, you know, you don't just need to have humans that are asking for authenticating to certain endpoints. You can also do this between machines that have a more automated type of setup. So this can build, you can use it for civil resistance because it actually has a civil resistance built in. It's all protocol level distribution through the Lightning protocol, HTTP and gRPC. And you can also share, sell, and attenuate the privileges so that the unique advantages of Macaroons allow you to kind of have more capabilities, maybe even create markets around these things. So I saw Christopher's on the queue. Chris, do you want to say something?
I can wait.
Okay. All right. So slide number six, how it works. I'm going to cover some key concepts first. We have on the HTTP side, you should be familiar with the status code. So everyone pretty much knows 404 with the resources missing or can't be found. And there's this much lesser known status code, the 402 payment required. It's been there since the beginning, but it's never really been able to be leveraged until today, really, I think. And then some key concepts from headers. I'm sure the people in this group are familiar with these, but the key concepts for LSATs are the response challenge. So when a 402 payment required response is sent back, there's going to be a header www authenticate, and that is going to be that's going to carry information about basically what is required. This is a challenge that's required in order to get access. And then the other header is the authorized request, the authorization header, which is what the when you send back a request that you are, believe has now been authorized, you're going to have this other header that's going to contain the LSAT. And now on the other side is Lightning. And again, please stop me if any of these are you know, require additional information. But going through some of the key concepts, in the Bolt 11 is so bolts are the like specifications essentially for Lightning. There's a group of proposals and they're published on and published and debated and on GitHub. The primary transport really of payment information today in the Lightning network is the spec that's been laid out in Bolt 11, and this is just the formatting around invoices and payment requests. So when it, right now, the way Lightning works, so there's moves to change this, is if you want to send a payment to somebody, that node has to send you an invoice that basically describes the nature of the payment, and part of that is for the routing information, and also it's how these payments are made securely. So you cannot send spontaneous payments yet, like you can on most, if not all, layer one protocols, right, where you can just send to a Bitcoin address. You need to have this invoice before you can send it, and they're basically one-off uses too. So you can't just like publish a single invoice in the way you can with a Bitcoin address. There's the pre-image. So whenever a Lightning node is generating an invoice, they create a pre-image and hash that pre-image. It's just a random 32-byte string. And they hash the pre-image to create the payment hash, which is also sometimes known as the ID or payment ID. And this ID is sent in the invoice. The pre-image is hidden and returned when that payment is made. This is all part of a key core concept for Lightning payments and invoices called, I don't have this in this slide, unfortunately, but called HTLCs or hash time lock contracts. And the idea is basically the way that Lightning works as a layer two protocol is you have it's all off chain. You have these contracts essentially that are constantly negotiated and renegotiated, and they have a balance between two users that want to make payments between each other. And the way that you keep people from cheating is through this pre-image payment hash exchange. And so when you make a payment, you will receive a pre-image in exchange, and that that basically ensures that the rebalancing that proves that you've gotten paid happens. What's nice about this, though, is that a pre-image, when you receive that pre-image, that is proof of payment. It's cryptographically secure proof of payment. So if you have a pre-image that maps to the payment hash in a Lightning invoice, anybody, even if they don't have access to the associated Lightning note, can prove that that payment was received. All right, so next slide 7. So this is just a quick diagram. I'm just showing how the protocol and exchange of information would work. So the first step is the client's going to make a request to the server for some protected content. And on the server's end, we're going to say, oh, well, there was no LSAT in this request, so we're going to want to be sending back a 402 response. Before we can do that, we need to prepare the challenge. And to do that, we're going to bake the macaroon and then issue the challenge. And what's nice, again, about macaroons is that we're not just – this macaroon is going to include the payment information related to an invoice that's generated and needs to be paid, but you can also add other caveats to this macaroon. And if you look at Boltwall, which is linked at the end of the presentation, that's the server middleware, you'll actually see that we have some built-in custom caveats, basically, that you can add to macaroons, and it's just enabled through a config, such as time-based caveat. So I have one that I built that basically says, for every Satoshi paid in a Lightning invoice associated with an LSAT, you will get 1 second of access to that endpoint. So you can add these time caveats to the LSAT, to the macaroon, out of the box. So if somebody pays 100 Satoshis, they will get back an LSAT that will give them access for 100 seconds. And there's lots of different whatever you can come up with, you can add as a caveat to these LSATs, essentially. So next, the server will send back the WWW Authenticate challenge, and the way that this is formatted is it has the prefix LSAT to indicate what type of challenge it is, and it'll include two pieces of information. On one side, you have the macaroon, which is what was baked with the caveats that are required in order to gain access, and then the invoice, which needs to be paid in order to get access. So next, the client sees that and they can pay the invoice. And so what I think what's kind of cool about this is the paying of the invoice can happen totally out of band of this communication layer between the client and the server. So this can add an extra layer of privacy, right? Because it doesn't have to be from the same device even. You can use a totally different Lightning node that's not on the device that you're asking the request from. All that requires is really that invoice gets paid, and as a special kind of proof for this, if you get the pre-image, if you make a payment on Lightning, you will get a pre-image back in return. That's the proof of payment, kind of unlocks that payment, and that pre-image, I click again, gets added into the LSAT token that gets sent back in the authorization header. And so the format for that is authorization, and then LSAT is a prefix, macaroon, and pre-image separated by a colon. And now, again, remember the power of macaroons. We can add other caveats to that macaroon that's sent in the LSAT. So once you have this LSAT and the paid invoice, you can theoretically have paid for somebody else and delegate. So let's say I have a week's worth of access with this LSAT, I can add a new caveat that says, okay, this caveat, this attenuated caveat has only a day's worth of access and give that to somebody else, but they get the benefit from the payment that I already made. So next slide 8, how it works with the macaroon. So the bare minimum of what we need in this macaroon, to ask, are they still HMAX? They are definitely still on HMAC. This is literally just still sorry, there was a question by Manu that says, asking about the structure of the macro node. Is still HMAC? Is it different from Tony Arcieri's version from many years ago? How large are they? They're pretty small. They're the same version. What I use in LSAT.js and Boltwall is a JavaScript library that's compatible with the Google version, Google's Macaroon library, I think libmacaroon, and yeah, it's the same from at least three or four years ago. I'm not as familiar with Tony Arcieri's version. Well, it's useful so there's a comment about not needing to answer, but I think it's useful to understand how the macaroons work, and the compatibility is a nice aspect of this. We're not kind of reinventing the wheel here. We're just using the macaroons that exist. And again, if people that are familiar with Lightning and LND might have picked this up, but the macaroon baking happens totally separate of the Lightning node. There's nothing that has, there's no reliance on LND or LND's macaroon bakery, as they call it, to create this system. So it can be, this can be put on as a layer in front of any of the other Lightning implementations and be written in other languages. The macaroon serialization format is the same as it has been at least for several years. So again, I think that's a very nice aspect of it. And really the idea with LSAT.js is all it does is kind of implements the common macaroon functionalities that you'd want on top of an LSAT and the reading, the serialization, deserialization of the headers. So with the macaroon, what we need at a bare minimum is a commitment to the invoice payment hash. So in the macaroon, basically it's baked into an identifier that's used to build each macaroon, and there is a format that includes the payment hash in that identifier. So when the initial macaroon is being baked, it's committing to the payment hash of the invoice. So this LSAT, it needs to be associated with that invoice. That way we can know what we're checking against. But if you're adding the pre-image, we also get this added benefit of stateless verification with the pre-image. So even if you don't have access to the Lightning node that is expecting payment, if a pre-image is attached in the LSAT, you know that the person that's sharing, or you know that the invoice associated with that LSAT has been paid because, or somehow got access to the person's node or broke SHA 256. So we can say with a good degree of certainty that it was paid. The LSAT also has a versioned identifier. So this can be useful for if you're storing the LSAT in a database, if you're trying to persist them and you need them to be looked up later. The versioning also allows us to add, to update the LSAT serialization format. So based off of the version, it's only at version 0 right now. And it's not even official, so we'll probably have a new version 0 as this is finalized in the next couple weeks, actually. And then if we need to change the serialization of the LSAT, we'll have these version identifiers. So it'll help add for more flexibility later on. With the caveats, we can add all sorts of flexibility and delegation capabilities onto our LSATs. The way that Lightning Labs is using them is in their loop out service, which is a way to get money from Lightning channels to on-chain and vice versa. And so you can have service levels where you're saying somebody with a specific LSAT has different levels of access. You can add expiration, which I described earlier, origin IP address. This is also built into Boltwall. So basically you say, this LSAT is only valid if the associated invoice is paid and the request that is sending this LSAT is made with the original IP address that made the initial request. And you can add whatever else you want really that you can come up with. And then the signature is made with an unforgeable secret key. So this is, this is stored and created at your leisure, but you want this to be secure and random and not really visible publicly. And this is what creates the original root signature on the macaroon that links all other future ones. Okay, so some quick use cases, pay-as-you-go paywalls. So I mentioned this earlier, no more subscriptions to just read one article. So basically imagine you are trying to access an article, your browser would get back a 402 payment required response, and in that response would be an LSAT challenge, which has an invoice in it. You can display that invoice to the client. They pay the invoice, and you get the pre-image back, and you send the now paid for LSAT token back to the server to read the post. Simple resistant machine to machine payment. So this, as well as the next example with HODL invoices, is how we're using this in Chainpoint right now. So basically, if you want to say, to get access to server use, for example, maybe, let's replace AWS completely with something like this, or in Chainpoint to say, you don't want somebody to flood your server with hash submissions, you can require a very small payment. So I think right now we're experimenting with just a 2 Satoshi payment in order to submit. And first you'll get the requester will get an LSAT that says, hey, you have to pay this, and then we'll send it back once it's been paid. HODL invoices is this construction that's now in Lightning. I think it might only be implemented in LND. I'm not sure, though. It's this thing where basically, I don't get too much into it, but it allows for kind of this a held payment where you send a payment, but it cannot be redeemed by the receiver until they actually have to get the pre-image themselves. So basically, the pre-image and payment hash combo are created out of band, and can only be, you need the pre-image to redeem that payment and settle it. We use this in Chainpoint and in Vault Wall. It's a built-in capability if somebody wanted to use this themselves for one-time use tokens. So the way that works kind of is reverse, where you say, if an invoice is paid but not settled, you have access. Once the payment is settled, then you lose access. So a fully paid payment is actually not valid when submitted. And this is something else that you can do with Lightning payments. Push subscriptions. So if you get an LSAT that's valid for a month, that's a subscription for a month. And if you want to make a new one, rather than you being forced basically to pay without, the way that subscriptions normally work is you pay until you cancel yourself. This is basically the service has to send you a new invoice and you pay for continued access. So it kind of switches the relationship between customer and business in a way that's maybe a little bit healthier or safer for our clients so they don't get unwittingly charged. And something that, if there's interest, I'll go more into detail about this, but this idea of decentralized OAuth with third-party caveats, but I also came up with a way to do this without third-party caveats. And this is basically the idea that you can have a platform or a server that's verifying that a third party has been paid and it's been paid to that public key without just the pre-image. I think this introduces a lot of interesting capabilities where, rather than using Google to verify sign-in, you can have, or better example would be like Medium.com. Instead of Medium.com doing payouts every month to the authors that are getting paid through the paywall, Medium as a platform would verify with the third party, the author, to say, oh, did you get paid? Okay, you got paid. I'm going to let this user through. I think there's probably a lot more, and that we're only scratching the surface of what can be done. So here are the links, LSAT toolkits that we've been developing. There's the LSAT.js, which is a utility library. This is slide 10 now for working with LSATs. It's written in TypeScript. Again, client-side library works in the browser, works on the server, and this is for parsing, composing, and validating LSATs. Vault Wall is a Node.js middleware for basically the idea is to create a drop-in solution, paywall solution for somebody that has a Node.js server and you want to protect access to a specific route on your server, you just pop in Vault Wall, a single line, and you've got protection, and it'll take care of the kind of handshake of sending the challenge and then verifying the LSATs in return. Requires some configuration. You need to give it access You need to give it credentials to the Lightning node that it's going to be generating the invoice from, and then after that, it's ready to go. Now, Vaultwall is a way to use a Zeit Now service for a serverless deployment of a Vaultwall server. So if you didn't want to just plop it in, but you wanted a server endpoint to be accessed for some other application to be to verify LSATs or to protect an invoice, protect a route that way, you can do that with Now Vaultwall. Basically, it's a CLI tool that you can install from NPM, and then with it walks you through all the configuration that you would need to do, and it also allows you, it walks you through the steps if you wanted to connect it to an existing BTC Pay server. And the LSAT Playground, you can go to that. If you click on the link in this slide, it will take you to a UI, in browser UI, that you can generate, deploy, verify, and just generally experiment with LSAT in the browser using LSAT.js. And then there's a test endpoint running against on testnet where you can pay for access for like 45 seconds to the Pokemon API and get random Pokemon back in return for a set period of time. And that's live. Again, if you click on that, you can play around with that. Okay, so additional resources at the end, original presentation by Rose Beef that introduced us all, and some of the main RFCs that I was using when building out my own tools, the original libmacaroon reference library, and then the way LND their repo has a README that kind of describes how they use macaroons. And so I made some updates to these slides, and it just like copied them at the end. I'm gonna, let me just check in the IRC chat. Do people want to see a little bit more about how the third-party authentication works?
We have a queue of three people, and we only have 5 minutes left. Can we start working through the queue? Actually, I can manage it now. Christopher, you're up.
This is first of the second in a series of discussions about requirements and examples of these new directed capability technologies. So last week was sort of ZCAPs and directed capabilities in general. This week, very specific with Lightning, and we hope to have more. But I had a question for you, Buck. What is the, I see kind of a mixed use of terms, authentication and authorization, which we're trying to maybe more clearly separate in this community. The 402 is, you know, please authenticate, and you respond with, no, I'm not going to authenticate, I'm going to authorize. Do you see any rigor there or an emerging things on separating those two? I mean, I think it's implied by macaroons, but, you know, how is the community doing it?
The community around the LSATs is super small. It's basically just me and a couple of the engineers over at Lightning Labs. At this point, the attempt is right now, the way that Lightning Labs is using it, I would say, is more around the authentication. So the LSAT kind of, you pay a very small amount as kind of just a form of civil resistance that proves who you are, and then they will attach service levels into their LSAT, and you basically use that as a login. So that's how they're using it. And then in Chainpoint, the way that Vaultwall is being used now is a little bit more on the authorization side. It's like, do you have permission to submit this hash? Yes or no, and you let the request go through. So I guess that basically just means it's not being entirely separated. They can serve both use cases. I don't think, the way I've been playing around with it, I don't think macaroons they don't seem to come built in with their own, they're not opinionated on that, I guess, would be my response.
Okay. Thank you.
Jonathan, you're up next.
Yeah, I suppose this has to do with the third-party validation, because I think faking the macaroon depends on the root key of the server. So this is really still sort of server-client sort of mentality. So how can you actually create that distributed public key infrastructure so you can do have that third-party validation or make this more self-sovereign than a peer-to-peer protocol?
Yeah, so this is what's really cool about using Lightning for this is Lightning basically gives you that distributed public key infrastructure out of the box. So I'm going to delete the initial slide. If you go to now slide 11, it'll be the third from the last slide. This is a full diagram of how that works, but what you're really doing is leveraging every Lightning node has a public key associated with it that most of the network can identify through the routing tables that they maintain. And that means that obviously it has its own private key associated with it. And you can also that public key, again, what's kind of cool in my opinion is that the public key has this identity built into it in the sense that it's almost a real world identity because you have to, that public key has channels associated with it. It has peers associated with it. It has payments associated with it. It's maintaining liquidity so it can route and make payments. So, and because you have all that, what you can do is, so we have two approaches, one that I've already built, the other that's still not built, and the one that's still not built is there's a demo that you can try out, but it uses the third-party caveat functionality of macaroons. The one that I built was basically the one with the root signing key, the server with the root signing key and creating the original macaroon will add a caveat that has a challenge in it, basically just a random string and a public key in that caveat. So in order for this LSAT to validate, the server is expecting there to be a second caveat that has the challenge again, the public key again, and a signature that is made with the private key associated with that public key and made by a Lightning node. So there's a prefix that Lightning nodes add to a message that they sign through the RPC, the signed message RPC, and it'll sign it and then add a new caveat after it's signed. And that's how it does it. So it uses the public key infrastructure already built into Lightning.
Great. So I noticed we're at time. Manu, I'm sorry that we didn't get to your question, but thank you very much, Buck, for joining us for this presentation. And any subsequent discussion, we can keep it going on the CCG mailing list. Thanks, everyone.
Sure.
I'll see you next week.
Sorry, I went a little long.
Oh, no worries at all. It was fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.